You've heard about VIP membership, you've thought about VIP membership, and now we're going to entice you to activate your VIP membership. Today, you can take $8 off a VIP membership. That brings our $9.99 monthly rate down to $1.99 for your first month, or apply it to our cheaper rates when you commit to 3 months or 1 year. That's $8 off with coupon code LiveCast18. That's LiveCast18, all one word, no space, LiveCast18 in the coupon code box when you check out pwtorch.com/goVIP. What comes with the VIP membership? Well, first of all the PW Torch livecasts on one RSS feed that you can subscribe to. But as a VIP member, these plugs and similar plugs, along with the advertising and commercials, edited out of the show. So a streamlined experience. Plus, VIP after shows, exclusive post-show content just for VIP members. Also, VIP exclusive content that nobody else hears. The Wade Keller Hotline every single day that I put out. And the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. And the Fix with Todd Martin that I host. And the post-pay-per-view roundtables, including the Royal Rumble post-pay-per-view show recorded right after the Rumble that I host. Also, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop site. PWTorch.com becomes PWTorchVIP.com for VIP members, ad-free access to everything on the site, and so much more. Did I mention 30-plus years of archives, retro radio shows going back to the early 1990s, thousands upon thousands of hours of podcasts on any topic you can imagine in professional wrestling from a top trusted team? Go check out our benefits, over 70 exclusive podcasts, over 25 live casts with plugs and ads removed, an RSS feed that lets you sign up for shows by theme, by title, or all at once, whatever is convenient for you. And yes, it's compatible with popular podcast apps on Apple and Android. So go check out details. That's pwtorch.com/goVIP. Choose your subscription option, 1 month, 3 month, or 1 year, and then enter coupon code LiveCast18 to take $8 off the price of your subscription. We are journalists. We are independent analysts. We are forever students of the game, working passionately to help you understand pro wrestling better and enjoy it on a different level than most fans by never stopping our own journey to learn and inquire and decipher everything going on in this fascinating genre. We are independent. We are unattached to and uncompromised by any affiliation with a pro wrestling company or dependence on cooperation with the companies we cover. So you can trust that what we're saying isn't hindered by conflicts of interest or fear of losing a current or future job in the industry. There's less hedging than you'll find elsewhere. You might have noticed that. No fanboy blind loyalty and no holding back. But we're also committed to fairness and exploring all sides of decisions that are made by promoters and wrestlers. So check out our complete coverage in print, text, and audio. pwtorch.com/goVIP. $8 off. A coupon awaits you. Act now before this offer expires. It's for a very limited time. The coupon code is LiveCast18.
Blog Talk Radio.
I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, welcoming you to Sunday night, February 11th, 2018's edition of Wrestling Night in America here on pwtorchlivecast.com. Thank you, as always, for joining me here on Wrestling Night in America as we are set to talk about some of the major events happening in and around the professional wrestling industry. A lot of stuff coming up with WWE and the road to WrestleMania. We'll get to all of that, as well as not only WrestleMania weekend WWE, but we've got NXT TakeOver New Orleans that weekend as well. Of course, a lot of independent shows running that weekend that we will begin to talk about as they put their cards together heading into that weekend. And we'll talk some about Impact Wrestling tonight, as well as some of the major independent shows that have happened this weekend or earlier this week. And to help me along on the journey tonight is PW Torch specialist Zach Haydorn. Zach, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here, as always.
It's the second time we've had Zach here on Wrestling Night in America, but he does audio elsewhere for The Torch. Zach, tell him about what you do for The Torch, both in written and audio form.
Yeah, I am your 205 live beat writer for pwtorch.com, and I also have a weekly column that comes out either late Friday night or early Saturday morning each week called The Artistry of Wrestling, a look into the artistic side of certain current event segments in that week on WWE television, typically. It doesn't have to be WWE, but usually it is. And then on the MMA Torch side, I have a weekly column there that comes out on Thursdays, and I am also one of the co-hosts for MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans on the PW Torch live cast on Monday night. So tomorrow night we will be live and taking your calls at 6 p.m. Central Time, and a lot to discuss on that show given the events last night at UFC 221.
Excellent. Yes, that will be an interesting show, part of the PW Torch live cast family. So be sure to check Zach and company out doing that. I want to start off the show talking about something that's in your wheelhouse, Zach, and that's 205 Live. It's the last 2 weeks we've seen a sort of transformation of 205 Live, which goes along with the reports, I believe first reported by PW Insider, that Triple H has taken the reins of 205 Live from Vince McMahon, and he's been running the show over the last 2 weeks as WWE puts together a cruiserweight title tournament, 16 men involved. The tournament will culminate at WrestleMania. So, Zach, as someone who has watched 205 Live, both versions, you know, we're 2 weeks into the Triple H era, as it were. And I think the differences to me are pretty noticeable, and I've watched closely the last 2 weeks. But as someone who's watched it as much as you have and have done reports on it, what do you feel the main differences of the show are over the last 2 weeks? And with Triple H now in charge, what differences do you expect to see going forward?
Yeah, it really has been a stark difference the last 2 weeks compared to the weeks and months of that show. Ahead of that, it really is a fascinating transformation, and really shows what one person's vision for it, how that can change the course of an entire show and entire brand. What they've been doing the last 2 weeks that they had really never done on 205 Live at all is feature the in-ring action and strictly that. Like, the last two episodes of 205 Live have just been solely built around action in the ring. There were backstage segments here and there from each guy competing in their respective tournament matches, but it was all focused on winning the match. There weren't silly antics backstage. There weren't PowerPoint presentations. There weren't other characters just running amok. It was really focused, and everything was driving to that in-ring product. And that is a stark difference to the presentation of 205 Live for so many months now. Prior to this kind of in-ring focus, a lot of it has just been silliness just all around. You know, on Halloween night, they had like a Halloween hijinks match and whatnot, where there was pumpkins and goblins and skeletons all around the ring. And it's just like, that's not what cruiserweight means to people when they think of the cruiserweight division. When you think cruiserweight, you think in-ring action, you think great move, you think fast-paced. And for the longest time, the show just didn't have anything to do with that. The last 2 weeks has really put the focus back on that action and back on what cruiserweight is synonymous with, and that is great in-ring work. So it's been a really tangible difference. You can feel it. And it's so much more watchable in this form than it has been in the last year.
And sort of a follow-up question to that, how much of that do you think is Triple H gaining influence over 205 Live versus not having Enzo Amore there and not having his character to build around? Because really, Triple H's takeover has sort of coincided with Enzo Amore being released from his WWE contract. So how much of the difference is just, hey, we don't have Enzo anymore. Maybe we should book now more in-ring. We don't have that character to focus on, because he was such a focus of 205 Live and the Cruiserweight division, versus how much of do you think is just Triple H's philosophy with how he wants to book the Cruiserweights?
I think both of those two go hand in hand. I mean, for one thing, you don't have Enzo Amore anymore to be kind of the centerpiece character, quote unquote, of that show. I think that Vince McMahon's booking and the way he likes to tell pro wrestling stories, like, lends itself to a character like Enzo Amore. And so with that piece gone, it's almost as if Vince was just like, since he's gone, I just don't want anything to do with this anymore. Hunter, take over and do what you want. On the flip side of that, I think, you know, through the production of the Cruiserweight Classic a few years back, you know, that was all Triple H's idea, who's his brainchild. And I think he's now bringing that to 205 Live as a whole. I mean, it's not just, there aren't just layers of that. It's not just the feeling. I mean, there are direct references where Nigel McGuinness and Vic Joseph on commentary are directly relating, hey, this tournament is going to be like the Cruiserweight Classic. It seems as if Triple H just has his pulse on what fans want the Cruiserweight division to be. I think he saw the success of the Cruiserweight Classic, and I think in his eyes, replicating that on 205 Live is the way to keep that show growing and to get it as a viable fourth brand for the WWE.
Do you believe these changes being implemented by Triple H, or at least the changes we've seen over the first 2 weeks, can this, I hate to use this word because it's such a broad idea, but can this save the Cruiserweight division? Can it save 205 Live?
I think it can save 205 Live. Yeah, I really do. I mean, look, if you're watching 205 Live, obviously you're a diehard pro wrestling fan who wants as much pro wrestling as you can get and wants it in a variety of different forms. And I think 205 Live is a niche show for the most diehard wrestling fan. I think I don't think you're going to get the, you know, once a month viewers making sure to chime in and tune in for 205 Live. But that diehard viewer, I think if continued to be presented in the way it has been the last 2 weeks, you know, there's going to be some good matches on that show moving forward. And there has been in the last 2 weeks that are going to be can't miss. I mean, that Hideo Itami versus Roderick Strong from last week's episode, I mean, I would say is a match to actually go out of your way, log into the network and watch. Like, it really was that good. And I think as Triple H takes over and as the show gains a little more notoriety in terms of featuring those matches, I think it's going to draw some attention and kind of hook in maybe that potential NXT viewer who really likes the action and grow the audience from there. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think over time, once Triple H can, you know, sink his talons into the show, it's gonna move the needle a little bit. I mean, Triple H, look, he on WWE programming as a character, that's one thing and a different topic, but he has built up respect amongst fans. I think he has a really good track record of kind of being right there with the audience in terms of understanding what they want. And I think he's trusted at this point because of the work that he's done with NXT, because of the work that he's done with the Cruiserweight Classic, and because of the work that he's done on tournaments like the Mae Young Classic. And I think for that reason, they will fans will give him a shot here because they have some faith in him.
Are you surprised to see guys like Roderick Strong and Tyler Bate, guys who have been almost exclusively, if not exclusively, NXT property? Do you see them? Was it a surprise to you, their involvement in this tournament? Obviously, you know, they need 16 guys to round out the Cruiserweight tournament. There may not be 16 on the main roster, so they would have to come from somewhere. But, you know, is this just, you know, guys to fill out the tournament, or is this another aspect of Triple H's influence where maybe he's testing the waters of how these guys perform on the main roster? And if the Strongs and maybe to a lesser extent Tyler Bate, with his being a, you know, the UK contract, I'm not sure if it's the same necessarily as Strong, but certainly with Roddy, is this testing the waters about a possible promotion?
Yeah, I think, I mean, on the surface, I was a little bit surprised that that these names were involved, especially week one when that news hadn't broke that Triple H was kind of leading the 205 Live charge and shouldering the responsibility for that brand. But I was pleasantly surprised because I think, you know, that show, if it's going to succeed even a little bit, it needs top talent or at least a couple perceived top talents to carry the brand. And right now, the talent on that show, guys like Drew Gulak, guys like Akira Tozawa, even a guy like Cedric Alexander, well, talented, all three of them, they're very much hurt by being associated with the 205 Live brand kind of pre this tournament. I mean, they have just done some horrifically bad and boring things on that show that they're kind of like the staple old guard guys of what the brand was prior to 2 weeks ago. And I think it's going to be really, really hard for them to shake that reputation. That said, I think there's a lot of guys in NXT that, you know, you look at their main roster prospects and because of their size, because of their age, maybe you're not really sure what Vince McMahon is going to do with them if and when they get called up to the main roster. 205 Live can be that stepping stone from life from NXT to 205 Live as their first toe dip into the main roster life, and then maybe promotion to Raw or SmackDown further down the road. But the bottom line is 205 Live needs talent, and it needs good talent who can work great matches in the ring for it to be a viable brand. So guys like Roderick Strong, guys like Tyler Bate, I mean, who knows, maybe down the road, a guy like Johnny Gargano or Adam Cole, you know, those are the type of people that I think are going to draw fans into this show. And maybe with Triple H being the top guy there and overseeing the whole brand, performers like Cole and Strong won't look at being on that show as a demotion, but as an opportunity to help grow the company and to help grow a brand that has been struggling for so long.
And my last question before we take our first break of the show, Triple H taking over the Cruiserweight tournament, Enzo Amore being out, that's coincided with the debut of Drake Maverick as the general manager of 205 Live. I think we can sit here and debate the merits of a general manager of the 205 Live brand, but given, you know, Maverick is general manager, the former rock star Spud, what do you think of his role so far and how well he's done?
I think he's been fantastic so far. I think it's obvious that he has loads of charisma. It's obvious that he is comfortable on the microphone, which you of course need to be if you're going to be in a GM role anywhere in the WWE. But the best thing that he brings to the table is a sense of fresh. I mean, he's a totally new face in the WWE. He's not somebody like the Hurricane or even like Rey Mysterio that kind of is a ode to the past. He's a brand new face that fans can get behind and see as a true leader of 205 Live. He's new, and I think he's just done a really good job of presenting himself on TV and delivering his lines as the authority figure on the show. The segment this past week with Drew Gulak and Tony Nese, he really just laid down the law in a way that showed that the 205 Live brand is now all about competition. It's not about silly PowerPoints, as Maverick put it. He's just done a really good job of kind of just taking hold of that position and running with it. And it's hard to say, but he just has an aura about him that commands attention. And I think for that role, that piece is needed, and so far he's done a really, really good job. So I'm very surprised. I'm not surprised because Rockstar Spud was always a talented guy, but I think the 205 Live GM in his hands is going to go better than it would elsewhere. Let's put it that way.
PW Torch contributor Zach Hadorn joining me here on Wrestling Night in America. When we get back after this break, we will talk the latest on Raw and SmackDown, preview this coming week's episodes of the shows, and we'll also take your phone calls. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. You can tweet questions to me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. We'll be back with more Wrestling Night in America right after this. Let me give you a task. Pick out a wine you're going to love, but there's a catch. It has to be one you haven't had before. Where would you start? Introducing Wink, spelled W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easier to discover great wines. It makes exploring new wines fun and easy, with delicious wine based on your taste, delivered right to your doorstep every month. Because Wink's experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, shipped right to your door, starting just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a bottle of delicious Wink, that's W-I-N-C, wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz. Answer simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee? And how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink, W-I-N-C, sends wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections. It's all too easy to go to the store and settle for the same bottle of wine you always get that just leaves you feeling meh. But it's so much easier to let Wink ship wine right to your door that is perfectly matched to you. Every month there are new delicious wines, like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. There's no membership fees. Skip any month. Cancel any time. Shipping is covered. And if you don't like a bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/pwtorch. You'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/pwtorch for $20 off. trywink.com/pwtorch.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America, my name is PW Torch columnist Greg Parks. I'm joined by Pro Wrestling Torch contributor Zach Haydorn here taking your calls, questions, thoughts, and chatting about the big events in pro wrestling as they occur. So we'll go to the phones for our first call. It is from the 814 area code. 814, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What questions or comments do you have for us this evening?
My first question is related to Ronda Rousey. Who does Zach think that UFC has the best shot of doing what Ronda Rousey is and sign a contract with WWE once their career ends in UFC?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Who on the current UFC roster that's a female do you see possibly trying to get a contract with WWE once their career ends?
Man, that is a tough question, but a good question, because I think women in the WWE now, like Shayna Baszler and, of course, Ronda Rousey, have kind of kicked that door down and have created some opportunities. Paige Van Zandt is somebody who I think could easily eventually be in the WWE. She hasn't necessarily lived up to her UFC potential, especially in her last couple fights. But she's really a likable person. She's really good at all the promotional efforts that the UFC has her out doing. She's done Dancing with the Stars, and she just seems to kind of, she gets what being in that business is all about. And I think she could easily transfer over to the WWE. Another person who I think has been kind of in the news a very, very little bit and kind of quietly, and she's not on a UFC contract right now, but Misha Tate could be somebody interesting that could make some waves in the WWE if she wanted to do that. So those two off the top of my head are women who I think could make the leap, but certainly that opportunity is there now that Baszler and Rousey have kind of kicked down that door.
My second question is on Brock Lesnar. Do you see any chance of him tag teaming with Ronda Rousey on a pay-per-view?
You know, Zach, that's an interesting question, because Rousey, with the way things are set up, doesn't appear set for a title match at WrestleMania. So there was kind of two ways to look at what she was going to do at WrestleMania based on appearance at the Royal Rumble, we thought maybe she would take on the other champion who Asuka does not face. But the way things came out on Raw this past week, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. So it looks like some sort of tag match with Stephanie McMahon will be in the cards. We know that Brock Lesnar is earmarked for Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. So is there an event, maybe at SummerSlam, Zach, where you could see Brock and Ronda teaming together in some sort? I don't know. It would be tough to get two worthy opponents, I think, that would be that could oppose them. I think Asuka would have to be one of the woman. I'm not sure what man you would get unless it was like I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, on the surface of just answering the question, could it happen? I think, sure, absolutely. Greg, I totally agree with you. I think Asuka would have to be a key piece of that. I mean, who knows? Maybe at SummerSlam, maybe you could even put Roman Reigns into that match because they'll have some more history between him and Lesnar at that point. But that said, even though it could happen, I find it kind of hard to actually come up with a scenario where it actually will happen just because there's so many matches out there for Lesnar to still have singles matches. And I think the WWE wants to feature him in singles matches. I think that's what draws best for them. And I kind of think they're going to stay in that lane for as long as they can. Could it happen? Yes, but I'm not sure that it will, just given what Lesnar still has left to do in the company on the single side.
The other thing is, if you do Ronda and somebody against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon at WrestleMania, you know, you've already kind of seen Ronda teaming with a guy against a man and a woman.
Right.
So it would sort of feel like a lesser version of what you would see at WrestleMania. The only way I see it really coming together to make sense is the idea has been floated out there, you know, to have Paul Heyman be Ronda's mouthpiece on WWE TV. So if that ever came to fruition, you would have Heyman being the natural link between Lesnar and Rousey. But I agree. I think it's a long shot, and especially if you've got Rousey and you've got Lesnar, if you're WWE, you probably want to put them in two separate matches to really make the most of their opportunities instead of putting them in one match. So there are certainly roadblocks. It's not something you can rule out of hand, but like I said, it certainly seemed like a long shot, Ryan.
And who do you possibly see being Ronda's trainer if she has to go on the road for a lot of movies and can't be at the performance center? Would it be someone like Brian Kendrick who trained Eva Marie?
You know, Kendrick has been training Ronda Rousey as well in California when she's had the opportunity. So she has been training for pro wrestling for a while now. Obviously, WWE thinks she's are comfortable enough with her to sign her to a deal more than just a one-match, one-off thing at WrestleMania. But, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question because for someone who is as limited in terms of just bumps in the ring as Ronda Rousey is, you know, it's one thing she's going on the road every week and she's learning at house shows or she's at the performance center every day when she's not on TV, but that's unlikely to be her schedule. She has movie commitments. She has all this other stuff. So, you know, if you're WWE, Zach, how do you make sure she balances, okay, yeah, I understand you have the movie commitments, but you also have commitments to us being WWE, and we need you to, you know, continue training to continue to get better so that you can be a valuable commodity in the ring to us.
Yeah, it's two main things. One is that, you know, when she's not on TV and when she's not on the road, you know, after this movie is done shooting and in between her other commitments, she's going to have to be at that performance center training just constantly and regularly until, you know, she gets to a place where she's comfortable. I mean, look, she doesn't have that experience in front of a live crowd. So she has to do even more behind the scenes to become as comfortable as she can when she steps foot in there. The good thing for her is twofold. One, I think at this point, like you alluded to, Greg, we're looking probably at her first match being a tag team match with her and a male opponent against Stephanie McMahon and Triple H. I mean, you can bet that that male opponent of hers is not going to be just some random guy. I think you're looking at somebody with a lot of star power. And if you look at those three people that are going to be in the ring with her, that's a ton of talent. I think in that scenario, she will be protected, and she's also going to shine because everybody else in there with her is so good. On the flip side of that, and to take that a step further, the talent that she's going to work with moving forward in singles matches, women like Asuka, women like Sasha Banks, Charlotte, maybe even Bayley down the road, Nia Jax, Alexa Bliss, like those are the cream of the crop women's pro wrestlers right now. They are the best in business, and that's going to help Ronda out a lot too, given her lack of experience. So I think the WWE has thought this through. I don't think they're just going to toss her to the wolves. They're going to put her in situations where she can thrive, and that starts at WrestleMania, and that'll continue with the talent she's booked with in the matches after that. But I think she'll be okay in that regard.
Ryan, any other thoughts or comments for us tonight?
Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ryan. Of course, if you want to call in and talk to Zach and me, it is 515-605-9345 to chat. Make sure you press 1 on your dial pad so that you show up in the studio here that I'm running as wanting to ask a question, and we will make sure to get to you. I think we'll take a break, and then we'll move on to talk of Raw and SmackDown. We'll hit on some Elimination Chamber musings based on what happened on Raw this past week, as well as the midweek news that broke on Twitter when Shane McMahon made the scheduled Dolph Ziggler-Baron Corbin match next week on SmackDown for a shot at the title at Fastlane to make what was once a triple threat a fatal four-way. So we'll get thoughts on that as well. Stay tuned to Wrestling Night in America. We'll be back.
As a PW Torch livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big-name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find my column every week in the Torch newsletter, as well as my roundtable pay-per-view reviews with the staff on WWE pay-per-view shows. And I'm joined by PW Torch contributor Zach Haydorn. So we move now to Raw and SmackDown TV. We've got the Elimination Chamber, the men's Elimination Chamber, almost set. There's one more spot left, and we're going to find out who gets that spot this week on Raw. when Finn Balor takes on Matt Hardy, Apollo Crews, and Bray Wyatt in a four-way match for that final spot in the Chamber. Zach, these are all guys who lost Chamber qualifying matches. Is this a good idea, this redemption, this second chance that can sort of build into a story for this guy going into the Elimination Chamber match? Or does this expose the lack of depth on Raw that in order to get that that next guy, the last guy in the Chamber match, they have to turn to those who are already on the losing side of a qualifying match?
Yeah, you know, I don't get that feeling from it. I see it more as a second chance opportunity and a shot at redemption for these guys. I mean, the way they positioned these matches on TV was that, you know, you had the best of the best colliding head on for a shot at WrestleMania. I mean, you had John Cena's antics in the ring where he really just was solely focused and was going to do whatever he could do to take down Finn Balor to get his opportunity to go to WrestleMania. So because it was framed that way, I don't think WWE is losing much or presenting these guys as a batch of losers that are now going to, you know, backdoor their way into this match. That said, I think they're going to have a hard time telling that redemption story with any one of those guys, Balor, Wyatt, Hardy, or Cruz, for the main reason, which is Roman Reigns is in the match. And I think at this point, everybody is just assuming he's going to win it, which makes the redemption story very hard to buy into. At least it does for me. I see Balor coming out on top here, and that's kind of what I'm basing this opinion on. But if I see a Balor win tomorrow night on Raw, and then him kind of position himself as, okay, I have this second chance, I'm going into the Chamber and I'm going to win, like, I'm only going to be able to suspend reality for a little bit until I realize, wait, Roman's in this match, Brock doesn't have an opponent. Okay, Finn, your redemption story is kind of, you know, you're in a lose-lose situation with it. So I think they can go that direction, but I don't think it's going to be effective in the end.
One of the points I made as I tweeted during Raw this past week, and you can catch my thoughts on Raw and SmackDown as they happen on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, I made the case for Apollo Crews to upset Miz this past week. My thinking was, you know, it'll elevate Apollo. It'll be a nice upset. Usually you have guys in the Elimination Chamber, the bigger names. You know, throw a guy like an Apollo Crews in there. Everybody knows Roman Reigns is going to win, as you mentioned. So, you know, you can't just say, okay, you can't put Crews in there because everybody knows he's going to lose. Well, yeah, everybody knows the others are going to lose too, except Roman Reigns. So is there value in putting a guy the level of Crews into the Elimination Chamber to kind of give him a nudge, even as we know Roman Reigns is going to win?
Yeah, I think there's some value in that move, certainly. I think it affects a lot of different things. For one, sure, it elevates him. It also leaves Miz available to have another match against somebody maybe like Finn Balor for the Intercontinental Championship. It just opens him up for another bigger match on the show. That said, the downside I see to that is just Apollo Crews has just been defined down for so long on WWE TV that the Elimination Chamber could come off to the casual viewer as just low bar because a guy like him is in the match. You know, if it's not stocked full of main event level guys, folks may look at it and go, what is going on here? So I think that could be the negative end of it, but it certainly would have been a surprise had he won, which is good and needed in this day and age of Monday Night Raw. But ultimately, I think they wanted just more main event stars in that match to make it seem as big as possible.
We had a question on Twitter from our friend Frank. He says he's wondering about the tension between Bayley and Sasha that we saw on Raw. Sasha turn looks obvious and makes sense, but do you think they would swerve us and turn Bayley? Her run, I think we all agree, is dead in the water. Is there any chance you think that Bayley turns heel out of this? To me, as if I'm reading it right, it looks like the seeds are being planted for Sasha to turn heel. WWE can always do a 180 and switch things up. To me, Sasha's been coming off a little more heelish than Bayley has. If Bayley turns heel, I mean, you're talking about a total character overhaul for her. Is it something you think WWE would be up to the task to do?
You know, I wouldn't put it past them. Certainly not, especially given how things have gone for her on the main roster since she was handcrafted and put on a silver platter from NXT and said, hey, here's $1 million, go with it. Seeing how they handled that, I wouldn't put anything past WWE, but at this point, I agree with you. I see Sasha as the one to turn here. You know, she's been planting the seeds. She's been the one that's come off as, you know, frustrated, annoyed, and almost just dismissive of her good friend Bayley. And I don't think those seeds are planted for a swerve. It just doesn't come across that way to me. It seems like they're planted for a reason. They're trying to tell a specific story here, and I don't think they're going to deviate from that story at this point in time. I don't know about you, Greg, but I'm a little worried about the position of this feud moving forward, especially if you look at WrestleMania, and obviously you're going to have two title matches there. I, for one, want to see Bayley versus Sasha on a really big stage and for the highest stakes possible. And with it competing for all the real estate on the WrestleMania card, I get worried that it's going to be relegated to a pre-show or something like that. And I would just be disappointed in that. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Well, we may have the source of the question to talk to about this, because as we're discussing Frank's question, 516 has popped up on the queue here. So we'll see if this is Frank.
Go.
He told me to look out for 516. Frank, is that you?
I don't think we could have planned that any better. If we tried to do that again, I don't think it would be possible. Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for calling in. You know, you were the one who set us up with that question. You've now heard the discussion. Do you have any follow-up thoughts on it?
Hang on. I want to get off the speakerphone, and if I hang up by accident, I'm going to call back. Hopefully I do this right. Technology. Hang on.
Okay.
Got it. Yeah, I didn't want to be on speakerphone. I got to be honest with you, Greg. I came in halfway through that discussion, but
okay.
I'm sorry. Zach Haydorn that's the co-host tonight?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Zach, good to talk to you. I got to be honest.
You too, Greg.
I just recently got into the whole, you know, PW Torch VIP stuff, so I haven't had a chance to read your stuff, but I will, and, you know, next time I talk to you, I want to definitely know a little bit more about you, but...
Well, I definitely appreciate that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good to talk to both of you guys. Greg, it's been a while since, you know, us tweeting and everything like that, so it's good to actually talk to you on the phone, you know?
definitely.
As far as, hang on one sec, I'm sorry. Yeah. That's okay. Got it. Okay. All right. Perhaps
the joys of live radio, man. It happens.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is. We just got the kids to bed, and getting the kids to bed is like the Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, and WrestleMania all rolled into one. A six-year-old and a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old is definitely.
That's why
I haven't called, because anyway, we'll get to business. Yeah, I think, Zach, you were talking about, you know, Sasha being the one to turn. And, you know, that's why my lead point was Sasha being the one turning actually does make sense, you know, because that's the way it's going. She's a natural heel. You know, Bayley is, you know, a baby face, you know, for the most part. I mean, I think she's only been a baby face in her career. So, you know, it does make – I'm just thinking for the shock value, you know, for kind of the, you know, something unexpected. You know, do you guys think that that could work at all? I mean, you know, it would come out of nowhere. I don't know how they would handle it. You know, I don't know how they would do it. But, you know, just to kind of freshen Bayley's character up, because, I mean, she's done nothing. She's basically dead in the water. And I just – you know, she comes out and hugs people. You know, I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Sure. And that's sort of, I don't know if you heard the point I made before I threw to Zach about that is, you know, if you do turn Bayley, it's going to be a complete character overhaul. So if you're WWE, you've got to have something in mind. Okay, you turn Bayley, she can't be this hugger anymore. She can't be this, you know, starry-eyed, I dreamed to be a wrestler when I was a kid type character. you've got to have something in mind to transition her to so that she doesn't get lost in the shuffle as a heel too. So,
right.
You know, if you're WWE and you have a good idea with that and Bayley is comfortable turning heel and portraying that character, then I think it's certainly something that's got to be on the table. But it with Bayley especially, it's not just a snap of the fingers and a turn. I think there's a lot more to it that you would have to address.
And to chime in on that further here, I also think that because Bayley has been so dead in the water and really, like you said, Frank, has done nothing on the main roster, the WWE still has a well of business to go to with her. If they want to kind of reset the wheel and tell her story better again. I mean, I think there's still money to be made off her character because they really haven't done anything with her since she's been brought up.
I mean, there's a ton of money they could make with her. She has the appeal, you know, she has the appeal of the kids. I mean, I could tell you my kids, you know, they always play Bayley's theme on my phone. They drive me crazy with that. But, you have the appeal and you even have the appeal with the audience, you know, like I didn't watch much of NXT until really last year. So I didn't see the Bayley run. But the first impression I got of Bayley was, you know, she's this lovable character. She's this lovable girl. But when she gets in the ring, she's all business. And I like that. And that's cool. And you kind of saw some of that in the beginning when she came up and she was in the ring with, I think it was Charlotte, when they brought her up back in 2016, you know, after SummerSlam. You know, and she was like, look, Charlotte, I'm not here to mess, and I'm not here to step on your toes or whatever she said, but I will challenge you for that WWE title. I like that. That's good. You know, she set forth her mission statement. And, you know, they put the title on her way too quick. You guys talked about that a lot throughout the podcast last year, so I don't want to, revisit all of that. But it's like ever since then, what have we done? You know, she had that, the kendo stick match with Alexa back, at Payback, whatever that was. And that was weird how they handled that. I thought they could go with something there, you know, maybe start a slow burn heel turn. Then that interview with Corey Graves where she wanted to give him a hug, and you know, even Corey looked a little weird, like, okay, what are we doing here? And then ever since then, it's been, you know, nothing. She took that time off, she came back, and it's been nothing, you know? And like you guys said, this is a money character. This is somebody that you could, you know, make some money with if you have a good storyline for her, but where is it, you know? And then, Greg, I even think once I sent you guys an email, and you said, I don't even know what Bayley's character is. That's how kind of I feel right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, she showed this past week on Raw in that match against Asuka that it's nothing to do with her in-ring work. I mean, that match against Asuka was really good, 10-11-minute match. You know, she took Asuka to the limit. So, you know, it's not like WWE is burying Bayley. I just don't think they know how to write for this character. I don't think they know what they want out of this character. And I think it's also been hurt by Alexa Bliss has sort of, when she was put on the main roster, I don't think that anyone expected her to blow off into this character that she's been. Now, granted, she's a heel and Bayley's a babyface, but you know, the writers are having a lot of fun writing for Alexa Bliss and making her the star of this show. Now you've got Asuka coming in, winning the Royal Rumble. She's a different kind of character, this powerful, undefeated woman that, you know, the writers can really sink their teeth into. So it's just like a lot of these women that are coming up are sort of passing Bayley on the totem pole. And, you know, it's nothing necessarily that she's done. It's just that, you know, the writers, Vince McMahon, find these other characters, whether it be Alexa, whether it be Asuka, to, you know, more interesting, I guess, to write for it could be.
Well, I think you said the buzzword, Greg, and that's Vince McMahon, because in NXT, I mean, I'm pretty sure that he doesn't get involved with that too much, right? I think that's pretty much Triple H's baby. You know, so when she comes up to the main roster, you know, you got Vince saying, well, what is Bayley? Oh, she goes out and hugs everybody. Oh, well, I don't know what we could do with that, you know? And, you know, when it gets to Vince, it's like, you know, she gets lost in the sauce. And, you know, like you said, you know, other characters have kind of come on. You know, I think we, you know, expected Asuka to be a big deal. But it's funny that you mentioned Alexa Bliss, because when she first came up, I wasn't sure what to think, and my wife wasn't fond of her either. And then there was an article in Bleacher Report, don't know who wrote it, but they said Alexa Bliss has all the makings of a star. And after I read that article, and as I watched her, and as I watched her, you know, present her character, it was spot on. And, you know, she's become one of the, you know, the biggest stars here in the last couple of years. So, you know, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. You know, when I first saw Alexa Bliss in NXT, and she was doing the sparkle kind of elfish character or whatever, you know, and she's a baby face, and then she turned heel, and I'm like, she's not going to work as a heel. I mean, she's built to be a baby face, her size, everything like that, and she has just completely blown me out of the water with her heel work. I've been greatly impressed. Frank, if you can stay on the line, we'll take your other questions or comments after this break. This is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on pwtorchlivecast.com for February 11th, 2018. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by my co-host this week, ProWrestlingTorch.com specialist Zach Haydorn, and we're on the phone with Frank. Frank, do you have any other questions or comments for us tonight?
Yeah, let me move forward. I don't know if you guys covered this yet tonight, but Shinsuke Nakamura, you know, trying to plot his route to WrestleMania. I was talking to Wade last week on the SmackDown post show, and we kind of, you know, we were kind of chatting about the whole, I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania, I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania, I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania. And then if I hear that one more time, you know, I think I'm going to go into SmackDown and beat him before he gets to WrestleMania. I mean, I just, I can't hear that five times a week. You know, it's kind of dumbing down, you know, the whole, match for me. But, you know, more importantly, just kind of figuring out his route to WrestleMania. What do you guys think about maybe a match with Jinder Mahal? I know that kind of sounds crazy to think that anything with Jinder is a good idea, but if you think about it, he's the one guy, once he came up to the main roster last year, he's the one guy that Shinsuke didn't beat. You know, they had the match at, you know, SummerSlam, and then I think it was Hell in a Cell or whatever it was. You know, and Jinder could kind of say, you know, and you could tell the story where Jinder could say, hey, look, you know what, you're going for the WWE title. I'm the former champion. I should be going to WrestleMania, and you didn't beat me. So you got to go through me before you get to WrestleMania. What about something like that?
Well, a lot of things in play here with that. The first thing is Fastlane coming up on, I have written down here, March 11th. You know, what do you do with Shinsuke on that show to make it meaningful, given that he's already got that WWE title match in his back pocket for WrestleMania?
Right.
So,
Nakamura versus Mahal, maybe at that show? Yeah, that was my idea. I'm sorry. I didn't specify that. That's actually my idea, is to kind of build to a feud where, I don't know, you want to put the title opportunity on the line, you know, whatever you want to do, because they've done that before, obviously. You know, maybe put the title opportunity on the line and tell the story. It would make use of Jinder Mahal, you know, if you're not going to, you know, utilize him.
Yeah.
And by the way, I tease a little bit about Jinder. I think Jinder is better than, you know, what we give him credit for. Shouldn't have had the title last year. That's a whole different story. But I think you could make use of him and at least occupy Shinsuke before you get to WrestleMania by maybe telling that story. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, there are so few options for Shinsuke there at Fastlane, because you figure you've got Owens, Zayn, and Styles thus far in that WWE title match there, and then one of Ziggler, Corbin. Well, if it's Corbin, you've already seen Ziggler, Nakamura. If it's Ziggler, I mean, Corbin, Nakamura, I guess that's an option. If you want Corbin to kind of be the bully that's standing in Nakamura's way and says, hey, you know, you won't make it to WrestleMania to challenge for the title because I'm going to beat you up here, at Fastlane. You know, you're not going to have him challenge for a secondary title. So if you're going to have him on the show, with, I would assume they will, but I don't think it's any guarantee. Mahal would seem to be one of the better names to do that with. Now, the other point, Frank, that you made earlier was about the build-up to Nakamura versus Styles and how it, you know, not impressive so far, and I would agree with that. But the thing you have to remember is how much can they start building Styles versus Nakamura when Styles has a title match at Fastlane against three other guys? So you probably want to hold off on that build and not give too much away here, because you still want to create the idea that Styles is in jeopardy of losing his title there. So I'm hoping after Fastlane is when you see that hype really get kicked into gear. I hope they draw on Nakamura's past with Styles, because I think that's what the fans who are anticipating this match want to see and want to hear about. And when you've got two baby faces like this, I think it's important that you draw on what you can, that being their history together. Zach, any comments about Mahal versus Nakamura possibly at Fastlane? Does that seem like an appropriate use of Nakamura at Fastlane to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's 100% the right call. You know, in a lot of ways, Mahal is the perfect opponent for Nakamura right now, because you want to have him go up against somebody that has some clout build up. And sure, Mahal has been on a downslide since he's lost the title. But, you know, just a few months ago, he was the reigning WWE champion and had been for a batch of 2017. So he really is a perfect opponent for Nakamura to go up against, to really have a short, sweet, concise, and to-the-point match with, that he comes out of looking extremely, extremely strong. And I think Mahal is the guy to do that with. On the flip side, as far as the build to WrestleMania goes, I think the "I'm going to beat you at WrestleMania" thing certainly will wear thin if it keeps going on until, you know, the middle part of March. But for right now, I'm fine with that, because they have such a long time to go between now and WrestleMania that they can't hit their stride too soon with this. So I think they're just laying some groundwork here, just tidying everybody over till they get past Fastlane, and then I'm hoping that once Fastlane is in the rearview mirror, pun definitely intended there, that they'll be off to the races with, you know, more of the build and excitement for Nakamura Styles that we've all been looking for.
Yeah, and again, you know, I think it's, you know, because you want to make use of the roster, you know, at Fastlane, and you certainly want to make use of, you know, everybody in the best way you can en route, and, you know, that's why I'm thinking, and even, you know, to your point about Corbin, Greg, I think that would be logical too. I just think if you kind of clean up that monkey that's on Nakamura's back, you know, from having the two losses, you know, last year, you know, you can have him, you know, knock off that demon, and now he's on a clear path, you know, to WrestleMania, and then you could start telling the story, you know, drawing upon their history. I don't know how much Vince is going to, you know, reveal about Japan. You know, he's not going to reveal too much, but they'll, you know, they'll tell it enough to get us interested. I mean, the match sells itself, but you still want to have a proper build, you know, in route to WrestleMania. So.
Yeah, I think you're right. The match sells itself. I think there's a lot of interest in those two guys getting together. Remember way back at Money in the Bank when they kind of squared off, and, you know, just the reaction from that. And I hope they go back to that, and I hope they show that as well, because I think that's another interesting sort of not quite a chapter, not long enough to be a chapter, maybe a page in the rivalry so far. So anything else for us, Frank?
Yeah, just the last thing now about this Daniel Bryan Shane McMahon story that's just got me rolling my eyes on a weekly basis, just wondering where exactly we're going. I'm wondering if the logical landing point, if let's just say he is actually cleared by WWE, which I don't know if anybody knows if he is or not. Maybe he is, they're hiding it, but would the logical landing spot be a tag team match at WrestleMania with Shane? Because you got to figure for Daniel's health, for his sake, I don't know that you want him doing a one-on-one match. And, you know, for the most part, Shane could do the majority of the work, you know, and then Daniel could get his spots in, you know, whenever they can. I mean, to me, it just seems like, the way to go, because what else would you do? You would do Daniel Bryan versus Shane. That's kind of a letdown. I mean, this would be kind of a letdown for Daniel's first match as well, but at least it makes more sense because you kind of protect Daniel a little bit. You make use of Owens and Zayn however you go, because I don't really see another way to, unless you're going to do Daniel Bryan versus, you know, Sami Zayn and Shane against Kevin again, or, you know, mix it up, whatever. I don't know. What do you guys think about that whole debacle of a story?
Yeah, and debacle, I think, is a good word to use, Frank. I think, yeah, Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon being involved in a tag team match at WrestleMania, if Daniel Bryan is cleared, I think is something that you have to look seriously at the direction being. Now, what direction do they go with that? Do they have Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon on opposite sides? Do they have Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan teaming up to face Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn? There's still so much, and Wade wrote about this in his SmackDown recap last week, there's still so much we don't know about this story. Like, we don't know. They've teased dissension, but there could be a way that they get on the same page between now and WrestleMania against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. The total opposite is true. They could end up going their separate ways, and Daniel Bryan sides with Owens and Zayn somehow. Or, you know, there's another set of wrestlers or another wrestler who comes into play, and Shane McMahon sides with them. There are so many variables still out there that it's so hard to predict. And I think it's even harder to predict a match if Daniel Bryan doesn't get clear. Because, you know, Shane McMahon is probably going to wrestle in some form. But if Daniel doesn't get cleared, you know, does he have a wrestler serve as proxy for him? Does he just kind of go to the sidelines? And does Shane's feud with, you know, Owens or Zayn or somebody take the forefront? It's really messy right now, and it's hard to see through the forest to see where things are going to go for WrestleMania. Zach, do you have any other insight that I'm missing here?
I mean, no, I think you hit most of it on the head. The thing of it is, with me in this storyline, is that two things. One is it's so beyond logical at this point and so illogical that it's almost, like you said, impossible to analyze. And as I try to, you know, read through everything and figure out what's going on, the only semblance of logic that I get to is Daniel Bryan wrestling in a match. I have to immediately run away from that because I know that he's not cleared yet. But I think if you just look at how this story is going and where it could possibly end up, to me, the only logical way that you get to something at all interesting is if Daniel Bryan is wrestling a match. And so that's just such a wild card for me right now that it sheds just a bunch of uncertainty on the story and really on SmackDown as a show right now, because so much of it is being tied to this story. So it's a tough one. It's a real tough one. But the way I see it playing out, I mean, the only way I can wrap my head around it is if Daniel Bryan is going to wrestle a match in some form at WrestleMania this year.
Right, because otherwise, what is the point? I mean, honestly, if Shane turns heel, I don't care. Every McMahon has been a heel for the last 20 years, okay? So that's going to be nothing new. If Daniel Bryan turns heel, I'm not going to buy it because they've tried that before. If you guys remember the whole Wyatt family story back in, you know, before he had his run to WrestleMania. Daniel Wyatt.
Yeah.
Nobody bought that. Even my wife and I were watching. And although I do have to say she made a funny point. She goes, I wonder, because he was growing the beard at the time. She goes, I wonder if he was growing the beard all along to join the Wyatt family. I said, wait a minute. I said,
yeah.
No, I don't think that was the case. But no, I mean, even then the fans didn't buy it. So if Daniel Bryan turns heel, well, why am I buying that? Why would I be invested in that? So we have another heel authority figure on SmackDown that's going to favor Owens and Zayn. To what end? Is Owens going to be the champ? Is Zayn going to be the champ? Oh, my God, they're going to be the tag team champions. Wow, what a payoff to the story. You know, I just, like I said, it just doesn't have a logical ending for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think and perhaps the reason WWE is stretching it out so far is they don't really know if Daniel Bryan is going to be cleared in time for WrestleMania. That's a point worth considering too. Frank, appreciate the call, your well-timed call this week, as always, and look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Absolutely, Greg. I think, in fact, I will be calling you next week, so I look forward to talking to you.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
That
is Frank. He drops off, and we will take a quick timeout, and we'll be back right after this to talk a little bit more about what's happening on SmackDown. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. The number to call if you'd like to chat with Torch contributor Zach Haydorn and myself, it's 515-605-9345. Do not forget to hit 1 on your keypad to chat with us. So we've talked about Raw. We've talked, thanks to Frank's phone call, quite a bit about SmackDown, actually. The one thing I did want to hit on, Zach, about SmackDown is something that we touched upon earlier when talking about opponents for Shinsuke Nakamura at Fastlane, and that is Dolph Ziggler versus Baron Corbin. During the week, Shane McMahon tweeted that that match that's going to be happening Tuesday night will decide the fourth man in what's now a fatal four-way match at Fastlane consisting of AJ Styles defending his title against Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and either Ziggler or Corbin. What's going on here? Like, do Ziggler and Corbin deserve an opportunity? You know, they weren't in the first SmackDown top 10 list, which was released on Tuesday night, which we'll talk about a little later. Ziggler dropped the U.S. title, walked out on WWE in storyline, appeared as the 30th entrant in the Royal Rumble and was eliminated about a minute and a half later. So he doesn't seem like a guy who fits the bill of someone who's deserving of an opportunity to fight for the WWE title. Or is this all the point? Is this the point that neither of these guys is deserving, yet Shane McMahon is making this match and Shane McMahon is announcing it and not Daniel Bryan? Is this more passive aggressiveness from the two authority figures on SmackDown? Is that how we're supposed to be reading it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is how you're supposed to be reading it, especially the way in which it was presented, where Shane's on social media going like, all right, well, if Daniel Bryan did this, now, okay, I'm going to do this, so ha, ha, ha. And that's just kind of how it came off to me. I still, even though that probably is what they're going for, I still don't think it makes any sense whatsoever, and it actually directly, completely just gives no credibility at all to the top 10 list that both Shane and Daniel Bryan are so high on. Like, you have this top 10 list. It's supposed to be there to drive, decision-making in terms of title opportunities and things of that nature. And now Shane's throwing guys in there that aren't even on that list. It's baffling to me. I mean, throw Ty Dillinger in that match or even somebody like Randy Orton. There's a lot of guys on that show in that top 10 list, or even not in that top 10 list, that are above the likes of Ziggler and Corbin. So I think it's just a really baffling decision. And yes, to your point, I do think that it's kind of made in the vein of furthering the Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon story, but I think it's at the expense of other things happening on the program. And I don't think that's a good thing.
One of the interesting things to me about this whole setup is from AJ Styles' point of view, he made an off-the-cuff remark after a match about fighting Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in a handicap match. Daniel Bryan took him at his word and made a handicap match for the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. Now, Shane McMahon, the other authority figure on SmackDown, after you know, AJ had words with Daniel Bryan about that and wondered aloud if Bryan was someone he could trust. You know, now Shane McMahon is adding a fourth guy to the match at Fastlane, which is going to make it more difficult, theoretically, in WWE's world of numbers, to retain his title at Fastlane and go on as champion to WrestleMania. So now Styles has a beef with Shane McMahon. So, you know, one of the things you're taught is keep your top star happy. And Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan are not keeping their top star happy by doing this and by stacking the odds against him. So even though Shane McMahon, you know, is maybe doing this to sort of passive-aggressively take a shot at Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles is the real loser here because now instead of beating two guys in a triple threat match, he has to beat three guys in a fatal four-way. So, you know, AJ Styles is being drawn into this Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan force field, and I don't think it's a good thing. It's not helping him out in any storytelling way. So, is Styles going to become this lone wolf who doesn't believe he can trust any of the authority figures on SmackDown now?
I mean, he certainly would be. I wouldn't fault him for that. Definitely, I think, when this storyline started between Shane and Daniel Bryan, you know, my first thought in my head was, okay, I'm cool with this taking place as long as AJ kind of stays far, far away from it and doesn't get wrapped up in the shenanigans that was to come. Unfortunately, he's smack dab in the middle of it, and luckily he has the WWE title and he has the Nakamura match to go to after this. If he didn't have that, I'd be very worried about his stock because the inconsistency of the Bryan Shane storyline right now is really it's dragging down a lot of other things on the show. And AJ's pretty bulletproof right now, but eventually I think it would hit him too. And he's above that and he deserves better than that. So it's just that inconsistency between Shane and Bryan and both of them making decisions that hurt their own champion just further plays up how baffling the storyline is and more so how baffling this decision is to make it a failed four-way match is at Fastlane. I'm with you.
The SmackDown top 10 list.
Oh, boy.
What's the point?
Am I missing something here?
I just don't understand.
Well, I don't either. And the only thing I can think of is that maybe it's strictly a means to an end to further tell this story between Bryan and Shane, where they can actually use that top 10 list and Bryan can come on SmackDown Tuesday night and go, hey, Shane, I know this is the land of opportunity, but look, you know, we have this top 10 list and you gave an amazing opportunity to guys that aren't even on it. Like, what's the point? And so maybe they'll use it as fodder to further that storyline. Outside of that, though, I really can't make sense of it. The list itself doesn't make any sense, and its purpose hasn't been defined enough for it to be a central point of a story. So I think it's just an avenue in which to further this Bryan Shane thing at this point. I don't know what you think, but that's my thought on it.
Yeah, I think you brought up a really good point about Bryan confronting Shane about putting guys in a match for the title when they're not even on the top 10 list. That seems to be the natural progression. There seems to be nothing binding about this top 10 list.
Right.
It's not,
I know.
You know, a top 10 ranking of, you know, even when Daniel Bryan explained how the votes were supposed to be compiled in the top 10, there was no mention of wins and losses. So that's not what we're even to look at. So, you know, even if Bryan does point out, hey, they're not on the top 10 list, Shane can say, well, it's not even about wins and losses. So, you know, who cares? And kind of destroy that right out of the gate. So there's a lot yet to be explained about that. And I don't really know. It could be just a storytelling device, as you brought up. want to talk about the upcoming pay-per-views before we take our next break. We have the Elimination Chamber on February 25th. We know five of the six wrestlers in the men's Elimination Chamber match. They are Braun Strowman, Elias, John Cena, Roman Reigns, and The Miz. And that is set up as a number one contender match. Winner will face Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. For the women, the women were announced this past week. Alexa Bliss, Bayley, Mandy Rose, Mickey James, Sonya Deville, and Sasha Banks, in addition to Asuka facing Nia Jax, where if Nia wins, she's added to the women's title match at WrestleMania. So, really interesting. I don't think anyone really saw that coming. I think we all expected Nia to be in the Elimination Chamber match. What do you make of her being put against Asuka, and if she wins, she gets put in the title match at WrestleMania?
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, initially looking at it and hearing it on Raw live last week, I was pretty taken aback and pretty confused. You know, for one thing, you know, I think Asuka needs to have a one-on-one match at WrestleMania culminating with her winning the title. And so my initial reaction was like, oh, don't muddy the waters by making her match a triple threat match. But then I think if you look at it big picture and you see what Asuka has done the last few weeks, and, you know, she's beaten Bayley clean, she's beaten Sasha Banks clean. I think they really are positioning her for a move to SmackDown to take on Charlotte for the SmackDown women's title. And this would then allow Nia Jax to challenge Alexa Bliss for the Raw Women's Championship, or have some sort of multi-woman match at WrestleMania while protecting Asuka. You could have maybe Bliss cost Jax the match somehow. I mean, there's been some seeds planted for a storyline between them for quite some time that I think they can go to the well to. But I think they've run the gamut on big Asuka matches on Raw with the thought of, okay, it's not going to hurt anybody on Raw that much because she's going to go to SmackDown. So that's my take on it. I think if you dive into that picture, you can see that it actually does make sense and should set up two nice championship matches for WrestleMania.
Do you see any scenario where Alexa Bliss does not leave the chamber match as champion?
You know, and I do. I think the chances aren't really that good, but I could see, you know, a scenario in which maybe Bayley wins the championship and they use that to kick off the Sasha Banks heel turn, and then you get the big Sasha versus Bayley match at WrestleMania with Sasha as the heel. I also think they could, within that match itself, turn Sasha Banks heel. Maybe she seats to win and it ends up pinning Bayley, something to that nature that can really spark her heel turn in a big way. So I do see that as a possibility, but I guess here, you know, a couple weeks away, with a couple more Raws left, I still see Alexa Bliss carrying that belt. But I think they have put some pieces on the board in which that title could change hands inside the chamber, definitely.
So that's what's on tap for Elimination Chamber. The only thing we know about Fastlane, which is coming up actually a month from tonight, March 11th, is that Styles, Owens, Zayn, in either Ziggler or Corbin match for the title that we talked about earlier. So after the break, we'll talk about NXT. We'll hit on Impact Wrestling quickly and some of the indies. Indies news, including some breaking news on the independent scene that we'll get to with our last segment here on Wrestling Night in America, so don't you go anywhere.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America, we turn our attention now to NXT. And Zach, I know it's going back a little further than we usually do here on Wrestling Night in America, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on the TakeOver show from Philadelphia.
Oh, I thought it was a masterpiece, Greg. I really did. I thought it you know, it was, it's crazy because it was, you know, relatively simple, two really simple stories and two big matches that carried the event and made it a must-see show. You know, I posted this on Twitter after I was done watching the Gargano Almas match, and it's like I have to believe at this point that Vince McMahon just doesn't want to present main roster wrestling in the way that NXT is presented. I mean, he sees the formula that is so successful amongst that group of fans and sees how well done it is and how well received it is, and he just doesn't want to go that route with the main roster. And so, you know, the more I watch these NXT shows, the more I think it's a concerted effort on his part to really not present the main roster brand in that way. That said, because of that, NXT really is one of the hottest pro wrestling today. It's really, it's can't miss. Even NXT cards that you look at and say, hey, you know, this one's going to be the one that's not very good. This one's going to be the one that's weak. And they always deliver. Johnny Gargano, just an incredible babyface right now. Everything that you want a babyface to be. And he's got two perfect opponents in Tommaso Ciampa and Cien Almas right now. So they're really clicking on all cylinders. And I think it's been really, really good. And I'm looking forward to what they do in New Orleans on WrestleMania weekend.
And that's a good transition into what happened this past week on NXT TV, wherein Johnny Gargano agreed to put his NXT career on the line for one more shot at the title held by Andrade Cien Almas. So does this mean Gargano's going to get the title, or is he set for the main roster?
Oh, man. You know, it's a really tough call, and I like that. I like that you can't just look at it and say outright one way or the other. I think he's ready for one of two things. I think he's ready for the main roster, but I think he still has potentially unfinished business with Tommaso Ciampa. So my take on it is that somewhere down the line that match is going to happen, but I'm going to go ahead and say here that he doesn't win the belt. He's main roster bound in some fashion, whether that's the 205 Live or otherwise. But I think with his call up, I think you'll see Ciampa's call up too. And you'll see those two on a collision course at some point. I can't see them not doing that match at this point in time, given what happened at last month's Takeover Philly. So I'm gonna say that he doesn't win the belt, unfortunately.
Also this past week on NXT TV, we had a very entertaining tornado tag match that pitted Sanity against the Undisputed Era. And to be honest, probably one of the better NXT TV matches, you know, if you want to say, you know, top three or four from maybe the last 6 months.
Oh yeah, it was a really, really good match. You know, it wasn't necessarily your technical masterpiece, but just the drama in it was off the charts. Both teams, I think, have some really, really nice chemistry together. In a way, I hope we get to see this again sometime. I'm not sure if there's a way to keep it going until TakeOver New Orleans, but I certainly like to see another battle between these teams, because that match was just it was incredible. Like you said, one of the better NXT TV matches that we've seen in a long, long time.
I know that we're quite a distance out from TakeOver New Orleans, and we're just coming off TakeOver Philly. Do you have any predictions for any matches set for TakeOver New Orleans, knowing that just as WWE puts their best foot forward with WrestleMania's lineup, traditionally, TakeOver follows suit. You know, does Ricochet make the show? War Machine, EC3? I mean, these are three talents or groups that were shown on camera at TakeOver Philly, so they're going to integrate themselves into the NXT show here at some point. So I guess to kind of narrow it down, looking at those three, do you see them being on the show in some form, and do you have a particular opponent that you'd like to see each man or group go against?
Yeah, I do think those guys will be featured in some capacity. I mean, it could be something where we see, you know, War Machine brought in and really just jumping right to the head of the line in the tag team division and to take on the Undisputed Era. I also think Ricky Steele is going to have a presence on the card. To me, I look at a match between him and maybe someone like Adam Cole as something that would be a good feud and a good story to tell. And at the top of that card, I kind of think Cien Almas is headed to the main roster as well. And Aleister Black is, you know, on fire, coming off two great takeover matches against Adam Cole and the Velveteen Dream. I mean, I think he's ready for a run as the champion of NXT. I think he can carry that brand for a while before his ascension to the main roster. But with Almas going, I think, you know, you got to pull the trigger on that match at some point. So I kind of expect that match to be on the TakeOver New Orleans card as well.
And you mentioned some guys who you think are earmarked for the main roster. And traditionally, post-WrestleMania time is a time when you know, a few NXT call-ups are made to the main roster to freshen things up and to take advantage of the really hot crowd that, that Raw and SmackDown, to a lesser extent SmackDown, get the nights after WrestleMania. If you had to pick, say, three talents, and they could be tag teams, they could be women, whatever, that called up in that post-WrestleMania few weeks, who would those people be?
They would be a short list is Andrade Cien Almas. I think he's more than ready. And with Vega incorporated into his act now, I think he's primed for big things in the main roster. I think in the tag team division, the Authors of Pain are a team that really they don't have anything left to do in NXT. They've been champions. They've won the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. They've faced off against really everybody at this point. Except for War Machine, who's coming in. But I think they are more than ready for the main roster. And then, you know, I think the obvious choices are probably Gargano and Ciampa in addition to that. And on the women's side, I think Ember Moon is ready for a promotion as well. I think she's also done really all she can do in NXT. I think she can pass the torch to Shayna Baszler and then onward and upward for her to Raw. Or SmackDown once WrestleMania is in the books.
And, you know, we saw Ember Moon in the Women's Royal Rumble. We saw Andrade Cien Almas and Adam Cole in the Men's Royal Rumble matches. So you have to wonder if, you know, those are sort of previews that WWE put out to kind of test the waters on the reactions these guys are getting with plans to perhaps call them up at some point in the near future. That is NXT for us. Just to go over Impact Wrestling and some of the independent news from shows of this past week, Thursday night. We know that Austin Aries is the new champion in Impact Wrestling. There was a number one contender match that Johnny Impact won over Alberto Del Patron, Moose, and EC3. Yes, the same EC3 who appeared on NXT Philly. So it's just the taping cycle. We also had the continuation of the feud between Laurel Van Ness and Allie. Next week on Impact, it's a loaded show, lots of matches announced already. Rosemary versus Hanaya. We have El Hijo del Fantasma against Taiji Ishimori for the X Division Championship. We have the debut of Brian Cage, who we've seen vignettes for in the previous few weeks. He made his name nationally on Lucha Underground, so he will debut next week. We also have a rematch for the Impact World title, which pits Eli Drake, the former champion, getting his rematch against Austin Aries. So that is set for Impact Thursday night on Pop TV. We had Ring of Honor with their Honor Reigns Supreme show on Friday, which was available as a test run on Ring of Honor's new streaming service. Some of the top matches included the Young Bucks defeating the Best Friends, Jay Lethal over Jonathan Gresham, and the former Emma, Tennille Dashwood, making her debut. She will be in the Women of Honor tournament that Ring of Honor is running to crown the first Women of Honor champion. So that's an interesting, newsworthy show for the debut of Tennille. MLW had their Road to the World Championship on Thursday at Gilt Nightclub in Orlando. World title tournament is underway in MLW. The tournament matches included Matt Riddle over Jeff Cobb. Tom Lawler defeated MVP. Shane Strickland beat Brody King. And Jimmy Havoc over MJF. Those were tournament matches on MLW's Road to the World Championship. New Japan had a New Beginnings in Osaka on Saturday. Okada defeated Sonata to retain the IWGP title. Goto over Evil to retain the NEVER Openweight Championship. And Will Ospreay over Takahashi to retain the Junior Heavyweight title. So those are the title matches. And breaking news, just before we went on the air, it was announced at the NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood tapings tonight that Nick Aldis has his first challenger for his NWA title. And it is the man with two hands himself, James Ellsworth. So that's happening on tonight's Championship Wrestling from Hollywood tapings. James Ellsworth challenges Nick Aldis for the NWA Championship. So that's an interesting bit of news for the NWA Championship. Something to look out for over the next few days. Zach, we've reached nearly the end of the show. Any parting shots, anything you want to discuss that we haven't yet hit on?
No, I think that it was a really great discussion. Kind of curious, though, while I have you, what are your thoughts for NXT call-ups?
It's interesting because you've got Ricochet and you've got EC3, plus a returning Drew McIntyre from injury around WrestleMania time. These are all guys who slot in at the top. So, really, whereas in the past you didn't want to take too many guys from the top of NXT for fear of hurting the depth at the top, you can really do that here. You can take a Gargano. You can take a Andrade Cien Almas. And because of the McIntyre return, because of the EC3 and Ricochet debuts, you're not necessarily going to be hurting for talent at the top of the card. So I do agree that I think the Gargano-Ciampa story still has yet to unfold. So I don't think we're going to see the end of Gargano in NXT anytime soon. Almas and Vega, I think that's a strike while the iron is hot situation. You want to bring them up as a pair, certainly, to the main roster. I think they give you something that you don't have on the main roster. So that's a pair that I would look for. Authors of Pain, they've done everything you can do in NXT, especially with War Machine coming in, very similar in a lot of ways to Authors of Pain. So I would bring Pain up as well. So those are just a couple off the top of my head that I would see brought up after WrestleMania.
I totally forgot about Drew McIntyre. He's somebody that could just jump right up to the main roster. And another quick question for you too. Well, we talked about 205 Live, with the amount of heat that's on Gargano and Ciampa right now, any chance you think they bring that feud to 205 Live to just get more eyes there?
Yeah. I mean, that's a possibility. And the one thing you have going for it is, you've always had the argument of bringing NXT stuff to the main roster is that, the people who watch NXT is such a small percentage of the people who watch the main roster. But 205 Live is on the same streaming service as NXT. So the people who watch NXT all have the capability of watching 205 Live and vice versa. So I think there is a thought that you could draw some NXT fans who are really into the Gargano-Ciampa story to 205 Live. And then you've got Gargano and Ciampa on the main roster. You've got them available on Monday Night Raw if you choose to use them. But you've also got their story continuing on 205 Live. So that's a really interesting thought.
Yeah, I thought so too, especially with Triple H kind of heading up the show now. It's like that could be a big way to cash in a little bit on that story in the, quote-unquote new era, even though I don't like that term of 205 Live.
Well, Zach, alert the fans as to where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter. That's where you can find all of my thoughts on the world of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts at Z Heydorn. That's at Z-H-E-Y-D-O-R-N.
Well, we thank Zach for co-hosting tonight on Wrestling Night in America. Zach, it's a pleasure to talk to you as always.
Yes, it's always great to be here. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Great, and I look forward to talking to you all again as well in listener land. So for Zach Haydorn, I am Greg Parks. You've been listening to Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. Love.